Krishna Prestaya Bhutale, Srimate Bhakti Vedanta, Swamin Iti Namine, Namaste Saraswate Deve, Gaudavani Pracharane, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi, Pashtyatya Deshatarane, Trinadapi Sunichena, Tarariva Sahishnuna, Amanina Manadena, Kirtaniya Sadahari, Harenama, Harenama, Harenama Ivakevalam, Kalau Nastyeva, 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 Gatir Anyata. Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhar, Srivas Adi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Today, we'll be reading from the Mahabharata, chapter number 14, Burning the Kandava Forest. First, our invocation from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Stri Shudra Dvijabandunang Trayi na Shruti Gochara Karma Shreyasi Mudhanang Shreya Evang Bhave Diha Iti Bharat Makyanang Kripaya Munina Kritam. Out of compassion, the great sage Vyasadev, who is very kind to the ignorant masses of people, thought it wise to edit the Vedas so that they might be assimilated by less intellectual persons. This would enable them to achieve the ultimate goal of life. Thus he compiled the great historical narration called Mahabharata, which is meant for women, laborers, and friends of the twice born. The Yadus bestowed vast amounts of wealth on Arjuna, and he left Dwaraka accompanied by a long train of chariots and elephants, as well as hundreds of thousands of cows decorated with silken gold. Subhadra rode with him on a fine golden chariot drawn by tall white steeds. They soon arrived at Indraprastha, and Arjuna went straight to Yudhisthira. He clasped his feet and worshipped him according to Vedic injunctions. Arjuna then worshipped Daumya and the other rishis in the royal court. When the ceremonies were complete, his other brothers embraced him with tears in their eyes and asked him to relate all of his adventures. After spending time with his brothers, Arjuna went to see Draupadi. As he entered her chamber, she turned away from him and said, "O Arjuna, what brings you here at this time? You should go and be with your new bride. The daughter of the Satvata race must be missing you now." Draupadi was annoyed. Arjuna was her favorite among the Pandavas, and she feared he might come to prefer Subhadra. The Pandava repeatedly begged her forgiveness and assured her that his love for her was in no way diminished. Draupadi continued to sulk. A second tie always relaxes the first one, no matter how strong it may have been. Arjuna tried to console the beautiful Draupadi, but she remained silent, always looking away from Arjuna. Seeing that he could not win her over, he left her chambers and went to see Subhadra. Arjuna asked Subhadra to dress herself as a cowherd girl. He wanted to remind Draupadi that Subhadra was the sister of Krishna, Draupadi's beloved lord. Krishna had begun his life as a cowherd boy in a small village known as Vrindavan. By having Subhadra appear as a cowherd girl, Arjuna hoped that Draupadi's natural affection for Krishna would be awakened and directed towards his sister, Subhadra. The Yadu princess was brought into Draupadi's chamber, attired in simple red silk. The servant girls who showed her in said, "This maiden has asked if she could become your servant." Subhadra immediately bowed before Draupadi and said, "I am here to do your bidding." Draupadi had never seen Subhadra and did not realize who she was. But seeing her humble demeanor and being reminded of her lord Krishna by Subhadra's rustic dress, Draupadi's heart melted. She raised her hands and blessed her. "May you become the wife of a hero and the mother of a hero, and may you be without rival." Subhadra replied, "May it be so." She then introduced herself. "I am Subhadra, Krishna's sister." Draupadi smiled and embraced her co-wife. Her jealousy and anger were dissipated by Subhadra's gentleness. She asked Subhadra to tell her everything about Dwaraka and Krishna. They spoke together for hours. Then Draupadi took Subhadra by the hand and led her to meet Kunti. The two Pandava queens soon became close friends and would spend much time together discussing the activities of Krishna and his associates. A few days after Arjuna's return, Krishna and Balaram came to Indraprastha, accompanied by Krishna's sons and ministers, and riding at the head of a great army. Krishna then entered the Pandava city, where he was greeted at the gates by Nakula and Sahadev. As they proceeded in state down the main highway, thousands of citizens stood along the roadside. They cheered and worshipped Krishna and his elder brother Balaram as they moved slowly toward Yudhisthira's palace. The Yadus gazed around them at the city. The roads were immaculately swept and sprinkled with perfumed water. Fences draped with bright garlands ran down the sides of the wide avenues. On the tops of tall white mansions flew countless flags and standards. The sweet scent of burning aloes filled the air, and the sound of musical instruments could be heard. Krishna and Balaram entered the Pandava's palace and went before Yudhisthira and his brothers. Yudhisthira worshipped Balaram with all due ceremony and embraced Krishna with affection. Krishna offered his respects and worship to Yudhisthira and Bhima, then took a seat in the assembly hall. Many important personalities from Dwaraka also took their places in the hall, including Akrura, Uddhava, Satyaki, Kritavarma, Charan, and Krishna's sons Pradyumna, Samba, and Aniruddha. Krishna then gave Arjuna all the bridal gifts for Subhadra that her relatives in Dwaraka had sent. He gave heaps of gold bricks and precious gems to Yudhishthira. Krishna also presented the king with 1,000 chariots adorned with rows of golden bells, each of them yoked to 4 steeds driven by well-trained chariots, 10,000 milk-bearing cows, 1,000 moon-like white horses with golden harnesses, and 1,000 white mules with black manes, which could run at the speed of the wind. As well as this, Balaram gave Arjuna as a wedding gift 1,000 elephants, each resembling a hill and decked with golden ornaments and bells. Innumerable other items were offered to the Pandavas, being brought before them by Krishna's servants. Placed outside the hall, the wealth given by the Yadavas looked like a sea stretching in all directions. Yudhishthira graciously accepted the gifts and then arranged for all the Pandavas to be accommodated in his palace. They and the Pandavas passed many days together in happiness, and when it came time for them to leave, the Pandavas in turn presented them with brilliant gems as gifts. With Balaram at the head, the Yadus headed back to Dwaraka. But Krishna decided to remain behind in order to spend some time alone with Arjuna. One day, Arjuna suggested, "O Krishna, the days are hot. Let us go for some time to the banks of the Yamuna. We have constructed many fine pleasure houses there." Krishna agreed to Arjuna's proposal, and they set off. They soon arrived at a charming spot amid groves of tall trees. High white mansions stood along the river banks, looking like a city of the gods. Krishna and Arjuna entered one of the houses, where they served varieties of exquisitely favored food and drinks. They lay down upon golden couches spread with silk covers. After relaxing for some time, they decided to go for a walk in the woods. The two heroes wandered along the riverbank, discussing martial arts and past battles they had fought together. Having walked for some distance, they sat down upon an ivory bench that had been placed near the edge of a dense forest. As they continued to talk, a Brahmana suddenly emerged from the woods. They looked at him in surprise. The Brahmana resembled an old shal tree with a complexion like molten gold. His beard and hair were bright yellow, and he shone like the morning sun. His two eyes were like lotus leaves, and his body was well formed and powerful. As the Brahmana approached them, blazing like fire, Krishna and Arjuna stood up and awaited his order. In a resonant voice, the Brahman said, "I know you too to be the foremost of all men. I myself am a voracious Brahman who eats much. I have therefore approached you in order to beg my food and be gratified by you." Both Krishna and Arjuna folded their palms and asked the Brahman what food he would like. The Brahmana replied, "I do not eat ordinary food. Know me to be Agni, the fire god. Give me food that suits me. Please help me devour this Kandava forest." Agni indicated the jungle by which they were standing. Although he had already made many attempts to consume the forest, his efforts had been repeatedly thwarted by Indra. This was because Indra's friend, the Naga Takshaka, lived in the forest. Whenever Agni blazed up and began to cover the forest, Indra would send torrents of rain to stop him. The fire god continued, "Both of you are expert in arms. By your prowess, you will be able to prevent Indra from stopping me. Thus I shall consume this great forest. O heroes, this is the food I desire to have from you." Krishna and Arjuna looked at each other in surprise. They assured Agni that they would do everything in their power to help him. But they were curious as to why he wanted to consume this particular forest. The deity explained that the Kandava forest contained various varieties of medicinal herbs. He needed the herbs because he was suffering a malady due to having eaten an excessive amount of ghee. There had been a great sacrifice performed by a king named Swetaki, in which so much ghee was offered into the fire that Agni became ill. Lord Brahma told him that he could be cured if he ate the herbs in the Kandava forest. When Agni failed in his attempts to consume the forest, Lord Brahma told him that he would succeed if he could gain the assistance of Krishna and Arjuna. Lord Brahma then said, "In a previous incarnation, these two men were in fact the ancient and infallible deities Nara and Narayan. They have appeared on earth to accomplish the purpose of the celestials. Therefore, ask them for their help." Agni then concluded, "I now depend upon you too. I must eat this forest. Lord Brahma has also informed me that the living beings within the forest are sinful and they should be destroyed. Therefore, do not harbor any doubts. This act is sanctioned by authority." Arjuna then replied, "I possess many celestial weapons, but I have no bow capable of bearing their power. If I am able to achieve the task you have set, I will require an inexhaustible quiver of arrows, and I will need a chariot drawn by celestial steeds. If you can provide all of this, then we will surely accomplish your desire." Agni meditated upon Varuna, the god of the netherworlds, and Varuna immediately appeared and said, "What shall I do for you?" Agni knew that Varuna kept many celestial weapons in the depths of the ocean. Therefore he asked him to present Arjuna with the celestial bow Gandiva, as well as two inexhaustible quivers of arrows. Agni also asked that Varuna bring forth a chariot belonging to Soma, the moon god. Varuna agreed and caused all those things to appear at that spot. Arjuna looked with wonder at the Gandiva bow. It appeared like a rainbow embedded with celestial gems. It was as tall as a man and was flawless. The Pandava took up the shining bow and forcefully twanged its string. A sound like the crash of thunder resided throughout the forest, terrifying all creatures. Holding the bow, the joyful Arjuna next approached the huge golden chariot. It was filled with varieties of celestial weapons, as well as the two inexhaustible quivers Agni had requested. The chariot was yoked with golden harnesses to silver steeds from the land of the Gandharvas. These horses were capable of going anywhere within all the three worlds and could move with the speed of the wind or the mind. Above the chariot flew a banner bearing an image of Hanuman, Lord Ram's great monkey servant. Hanuman seemed to be burning everything that fell within his gaze. Other flags flew on the chariot, bearing images of fierce beasts. All the creatures roared terribly from their banners. Arjuna circumambulated the chariot and then mounted it, like a virtuous man ascending to heaven. He put on the suit of celestial armor that lay there. As he stood with the Gandiva bow in his hand, he resembled the sun shining from behind an evening cloud. He then took the chariot around, smiling as he heard the loud rumble of its wheels. Varuna also gave Krishna a club called Kaumodaki, which roared loudly when wheeled about, and which could crush even Daityas and Danavas. Krishna then mounted Arjuna's chariot, saying that he would become the driver. Arjuna again addressed Agni. O fire god, we are now ready to satisfy your request. Armed with the Gandiva bow and assisted by Krishna, I am now able to withstand the entire host of gods, united with the Asuras. What then to speak of Indra? Therefore, blaze up as much as you like and surround this forest. Agni immediately expanded himself around the forest and began to consume it with his seven kinds of flames. He assumed the fearful appearance he assumes at the end of an age when he used and he needs to destroy all things. Krishna then began to drive the chariot around the forest. It moved with such speed that it appeared to be continuously present on every side of the forest. Whenever Arjuna saw a creature trying to escape from the conflagration, he immediately shot it down. Being slain in the presence of Krishna, the Supreme Deity, all the creatures dying in that forest assumed spiritual forms and ascended to the highest regions of transcendence. The roar of the fire could be heard for miles. Flames of red, orange, and blue shot high into the sky. Lakes and ponds in the forest were boiled dry and rocks melted. No creature was able to escape from the blazing Kandava forest, and their screams mixed with the crackling of the fire. It blazed up to such an extent that it caused fear even to the celestials. They all went in one body to Indra and said anxiously, O Lord of the immortals, why does Agni burn all creatures below? Has the time come for the world's destruction? Indra looked himself to see what was happening on earth. Feeling concerned for his friend Takshaka, he set out at once to stop the fire. He set down torrents of rain, which fell in columns as thick as tree trunks. But the rain was turned to steam by the heat of the fire even before it reached the forest below. Indra then became angry and amassed huge clouds over the forest, which doubled the volume of rain. With its flames and smoke rising up, and with lightning and sheets of water falling from the sky, the forest became terrifying. Arjuna saw Indra's attempt to put out the fire, and he sent hundreds and thousands of arrows in a tight network over the forest. That net of arrows acted as a vast umbrella, completely checking the falling rain. The Naga king Takshaka was not present in the Kandava forest, but both his wife and son were caught in the blaze. They flew swiftly upwards and were seen by Arjuna. He instantly fired an arrow which severed the snake lady's head. He then trained another arrow upon Takshaka's son, Ashvasena. Seeing this, Arjuna raised the violent wind around Arjuna, which temporarily deprived him of his senses. Ashvasena escaped and disappeared into the sky. As he regained his senses, Arjuna became angry with Indra. He shouted a challenge to the god and covered the sky with his arrows. Indra too became angry with Arjuna and released his tremendous thunderbolt weapon. Without delay, Arjuna invoked the Vayavya weapon, which dispersed the huge black clouds. That powerful wind weapon completely dispelled the energy of Indra's thunderbolts and lightning flashes. The sky became clear, and a gentle breeze began to blow. Agni blazed up even more, fanned by the breeze, and fed with the fat of bodies burning in the forest. Agni filled the sky with his roars. Indra summoned many other demigods to fight against Arjuna. Hosts of powerful heavenly fighters appeared and began to send their weapons at both Arjuna and Krishna. Blazing iron balls, bullets, rocks, and countless arrows shot toward them. Arjuna countered all the missiles with his arrows, and at the same time, he cut down his assailants, who fell screaming into the fire. Arjuna was unconquerable as he stood on the battlefield, releasing his deadly arrows, with Krishna skillfully guiding the chariot. Indra then mounted his celestial elephant Airavata and rushed down upon Arjuna and Krishna, shouting, "These two are killed!" He raised his personal weapon known as the Vajra and urged on his elephant. Seeing Indra advance, the other principal gods followed him. Yamaraj took up his death-dealing club, Kuvera his mace, and Varuna his noose. The commander of the celestial army, Skanda, raised his Shakti weapon, and Surya came with his brilliant dart. The other gods charged behind Indra with their own weapons raised. The Vishvedevas, Sadyas, Rudras, Basus, and Maruts all advanced in a body toward Arjuna and Krishna, who stood fearlessly below. Even though they exerted themselves with full force, however, the demigods were unable to overpower Krishna and Arjuna. Struck by Arjuna's mystical arrows, the demigods were forced to retreat. Indra smiled. He was pleased with Arjuna, who was, after all, his own son. And he also understood Krishna's position. Indra knew that no one could overcome Krishna or anyone supported by him. Obviously, Krishna desired that Agni consume the forest, and at the same time, Krishna was enhancing the fame and glory of his friend Arjuna. Then, desiring to test Arjuna's power further, Indra sent down a thick shower of boulders. Arjuna quickly reduced the stones to dust with his swift arrows. Indra then tore off the peak of a massive mountain and hurled it at Arjuna. Not being disturbed in the least, Arjuna cut the flying mountain peak into 1,000 pieces, which rained down upon the forest below. Indra was gladdened by Arjuna's prowess. He ordered the demigods to withdraw, and as he did so, an invisible voice was heard in the sky. O Indra, your friend Takshaka is not in the forest at present, nor will it be possible for you to defeat in battle Arjuna and Krishna. These two persons are Nara and Narayan, the immortal and the invincible rishis. They are worthy of even the worship by the gods. Desist from battle, for the burning of the Kandava forest has been ordained by fate. Having heard that voice, which they knew belonged to the universal creator Lord Brahma, the demigods returned to their own abodes. For 15 days, Agni continued to consume the forest along with its inhabitants. As the forest was destroyed, hordes of Rakshasas, Danavas and Nagas rushed out in fear. Arjuna cut them down with volleys of arrows. No one could even look at him as he stood releasing his searing shafts. Gradually the forest was reduced to ashes and Agni was gratified. There was a leader of the Asura race named Maya, who had been dwelling in the Kandava forest. Having hid himself underground, he now rushed out of the forest and tried to escape. Agni chased the Asura, and Krishna raised his discus weapon, Sudarshana, ready to kill him. The intelligent Maya Danava ran to Arjuna and fell at his feet. O Arjuna, I seek your protection. Save me. I supplicate myself before you. Arjuna raised his hands and replied, "Do not fear." He could not refuse to protect anyone who sought his shelter. He turned toward Krishna and asked him to spare the Asura's life. Krishna lowered his weapon, and Agni also stood back. As the flames in the forest died down, Indra again appeared before Arjuna and Krishna. Agni stood next to him as he said, "O Partha, O Keshava, you have achieved that which could not be achieved by any celestial. Please ask from me any boon you desire. I am very much pleased." Arjuna asked Indra for all of his celestial weapons. Indra smiled and replied that he would indeed give him the weapons, but not yet. When Lord Shiva would give Arjuna his Pashupat weapon, then Indra would bring him to heaven and give him all the fire and wind weapons. That time would come in the near future. Krishna asked that his friendship with Arjuna might last forever. And Indra said, "It shall be so." Finally, Agni said, "I also wish to give you a boon. Just as I pervade this universe, so by my power will you be able to go anywhere you desire within the universe." The gods then returned to the heavens. As Krishna and Arjuna made their way back to their mansion, Maya Danava approached them. He bowed at Arjuna's feet and said, "O son of Kunti, you have saved me from the angry Krishna and the hungry Agni. Tell me what I can do for you in return." Arjuna replied, "I cannot take anything from you to repay me. This is my firm principle. I act only out of duty. It was my duty to save you, and therefore you bear me no obligation. Go in peace." Maya Danava praised Arjuna's virtue, but he insisted upon doing something for Arjuna. "I simply wish to please you, O Partha. You need not see it as repayment." Again, Arjuna said that he could not accept anything from Maya. "I do not want to frustrate your desire, so if you want to please me, then you should do something for my friend Krishna. That will be more pleasing to me than anything else." Maya Danava turned and looked expectantly at Krishna. Krishna was smiling softly. After reflecting for a moment, Krishna said, "You are the architect of the celestial demons. If you wish to please me, then build a splendid assembly hall for Yudhishthira. The likes of this hall should not be found anywhere in the world. It should contain the features of celestial architecture, and it should be impossible for anyone else to emulate." The Asura's skills were well known to Krishna. Maya Danava had constructed many wondrous edifices in the higher planets for the Daityas and Danavas. Maya Danava then assented to Krishna's request and accompanied him and Arjuna back to Indraprastha, where he was introduced to Yudhishthira. The eldest Pandava marveled as Arjuna narrated the story of how the Kandava forest was burnt. He received Maya Danava with honor and discussed the hall with him. After much thought, Maya Danava drew up a design. He then began to consider where to find the necessary materials for constructing the celestial hall. He told the Pandavas that he needed to go to the Himalayas. "I have left there a large quantity of rough diamonds and other precious stones of every description, including those not found on earth. I shall therefore go and fetch them." Mayadhanava explained that he had formerly been engaged by Vrishaparva, the king of the Danavas, to construct sacrificial altars for the demons. He had gathered all kinds of celestial materials, which he had stored at Vrishaparva's house high upon the Mainaka mountain. There was also a great club with which Vrishaparva had once withstood the demigods in battle. Mayadhanava would bring that club, which was equal to 100,000 ordinary clubs, and he would give it to Bhimasena. He would also fetch from the depths of a lake on Mainaka the large celestial conch known as Devadatta and give it to Arjuna. If Arjuna blew that conch on the battlefield, it would shatter his opponent's hearts. Having gained Yudhisthira's permission, the Asura left quickly for the north. He found all the wealth guarded by Yakshas and Rakshasas, and with their assistance, he brought it back to Indraprastha. After presenting the club to Bhima and the conch shell to Arjuna, Mayadhanava commenced work.